Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome you to Straight No Chaser, the jazzier side of poetry. This particular show, we celebrate the intersection between jazz and poetry, an intersection that began many, many, many years ago. Structured and free, sonic and rhythmic, like natural partners, this music, this jazz poetry inspired many people with this particular style of writing. So again, Straight No Chaser, the jazzier side of poetry, celebrates this genre. And tonight, we are pleased to welcome our very first guest, Mr. Martin Willett Jr. Martin, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing quite well. And yourself?
Fine. Can you hear any other line?
I can hear you perfectly. I'd like to welcome you to our show. I'd like to welcome you to our show as our very first guest. Are you there?
Yes, I'm waiting.
Okay. Again, I'd like to welcome you to our show as our very first guest. What we'd like to do with the as a part of the DC Poetry Project is offer programming that appeals to a number of vast audiences, different audiences, and one way we do that is through our Blog Talk Radio show. So, again, this show is the very first episode, and we're just so pleased to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. I think we have one caller that I'd like to bring on. Hold on 1 second.
No problem.
All right. We have a caller, area code 301. The first number is 7. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Michael. This is Marianne.
Hello, Marianne. How are you?
Hi, Marianne.
Good. Hi. So I finally get to hear your voice, Martin.
Marianne, welcome to Straight No Chaser, the jazzier side of poetry.
Thanks.
All right.
I'm listening on the phone because... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm listening on the phone because my computer, I think, is a little bit odd tonight.
Okay, not a problem.
The connection is kind of slow in the back.
Well, I know there's a thunderstorm here, so it's been really a tough day, yes. Well, what I'd like to do to begin with, as we welcome other callers, is first share with our listening public that the number is 646-716-8754, Straight No Chaser, the jazzier side of poetry. And you're welcome to tweet us at the DC Poetry Project, at DC Poetry Project. Tweet questions for Martin. You're also welcome to post questions on Facebook if you have any questions. So we're just going to have a really great time tonight. I'd like to begin by reading Martin's bio. Martin Willett Jr. is an incredible, incredible man. We've had an opportunity to have a few conversations, and that really just touched the surface in terms of who he is as a person and as an artist. Mr. Willett Jr. has been nominated for 11 Pushcart Awards and 11 Best of the Net Awards. He is the winner of the 2012 Big River Poetry Review's William K. Hathaway Award, co-winner of the 2013 Bill Holm Witness Poetry Contest, winner of the 2013 Trees Poetry Contest, winner of the 2014 Broadsided Award, and winner of the 2014 Dylan Thomas International Poetry Contest. You've done a lot of things, Martin. You've won a lot of awards. He has over 28 chapbooks published, as well as 8 full-length collections of poetry published. His forthcoming collections include Martin Willett Jr. Greatest Hits on Cattywampus Press, How to Be Silent, Future Cycle Press, God Is Not Amused with What You Are Doing in Her Name, Aldrich Press, and Hearing the Inaudible, Poetica Publishing. That's a mouthful. And the title of his jazz poetry chapbook is Late All Night Sessions with Charlie the Bird Parker and Members of the Birdland in Take Three. Now, Martin also worked with us in terms of, I'm just really excited. That's all I can say. Martin and Marianne, they know each other. They go way back. Marianne Silk is on the line as well, and she's the editor of the Song Is Blogspot, and she's the person that helped us find Martin for tonight. She's also a DC Poetry Project member. Again, Marianne, share your name and talk just a little bit about your blog site.
Hi, yes. This is Marianne, and actually we're coming on the year anniversary for the Song Is. We're in the middle of the spring summer contest, and there are two categories. The first is women in music. I prefer that you write about women in jazz music, but they can, the women can be, in any kind of music. But I, definitely prefer women in jazz, and these women can be singers, they can be instrumentalists, they can be composers. It's, and maybe even characters in a jazz song. And the other contest is swing music. So I'm definitely looking for people, to write poems in those categories.
Well, I'd like to ask you first, Marianne, before we move into Martin, in terms of his presentation tonight, what was the impetus for starting the Song Is Blogspot? Because, again, a number of our guests have been a part of your blogspot, so I just wanted to know the impetus for your beginning it.
Yeah. I was actually reading and reviewing a book by Yusuf Komunyakaa. It was testimony about Charlie Parker, and I was wondering, okay, there's all this jazz, but people only write poems about Miles and Coltrane and, the people who are no longer with us. What about the people who are with us? In fact, I was at Ron Carter's gig at Bohemian Caverns, and I said, hey, come on, why isn't somebody writing about this gig?
Okay.
So, hence the first contest, which was, about poems inspired by musicians from who were born on or after May 4th, 1937, which is Ron Carter's birthday. So it's a very broad definition of young.
Well, all right. Well, that brings us to you, Martin. In terms of your work, I shared information about you based on your biographical sketch. Tell us more about you, Martin, and your work.
Well, when I entered Marianne's program, I wrote about Thelonious Monk. And I'm not sure if he fits that category or not, but...
That was the fall contest.
So that was your fall contest?
Yeah.
All right. So, Martin, you wrote about Thelonious Monk.
What's that?
You wrote about Thelonious Monk?
That's correct.
Okay.
I've actually, he's not an easy jazz musician to listen to, but I have a poem about him. Now, he had a critic named Philip Larkin who wrote a negative review of one of Thelonious Monk's pieces. And he called Thelonious Monk the elephant on the keyboard. So I wrote about that. No elephant can play the pauses, the offbeat, know when silence is needed, when to fill with as many notes as possible. No elephant can do what I do, wearing beret and shades, because the lights of fame are blinding, man. Oh, they can trumpet. I'll put them in the horns. They're used to working for peanuts, anyhow. But can an elephant get up from playing, dance, go back to play without missing a step or note? I think not. Can an elephant carry a tune back with a heartbreak or a sunbreak? Thought not. Come to think of it, what do you know about music, Philip? I've been on the cover of Time. What you do? All you think is pretty smart, been going to school, but I've been to hard times and dull times and grown-up times and hard-swinging times. When the mainstream critics like you don't get it, it's because you ain't got no ear like an elephant. I take it as a compliment. I must be doing something right when you get it all wrong.
Wow. Well, everyone, you can tell what we're in store for tonight. So what I'd like to do is to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Straight No Chaser, the jazzier side of poetry. Hold on 1 second. My name is Michael Ingram, and welcome to Straight No Chaser, the jazziest side of poetry. We just heard Martin share a piece that he wrote about Thelonious Monk. It was a great piece. We've got another person on the line. I'd like to bring this person in. Hold on 1 second. All right, caller, area code 256, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Hello, hello, Wing Dog. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm well, just chilling.
Okay, great, great, great. Welcome to Straight No Chaser, the jazzy side of poetry, with our very special guest tonight, Mr. Martin Willits. Martin, talk about the piece that you just showed, that you just shared. Excuse me.
Well, I was trying to write from the perspective of Thelonious Monk himself, as how he would respond to this critic that really didn't understand jazz. So basically, that's what I was writing about. And I was also trying to capture his unusual tempo that he would do while he was playing. He would change different tempos. He would change different keys, even more than most jazz musicians ever did.
Well, let me ask you this question. What does jazz poetry mean to you? I mean, there's an official definition, but what does it mean to you?
Well, for me, it means capturing the feeling of the music. And the in jazz, they had this expression that was called playing the pauses. I actually wrote a poem about that. But playing the pauses means when you're doing the improvisation in jazz and you've got the soul part, you're trying to work within a certain key, like key of, say, for example, G or F or A or some other key, and you only have so many notes that are in that key. So you have to improvise within that key and try to come up with as many ideas as you can within that key in the time that you're given for a solo. So you have to be able to think on your feet. You have to know what key you're in. You have to know all the notes that are in it and try to figure out how you can play them in different ways at different times. And step back and let somebody else come in.
That can be very difficult, stepping back and allowing someone else to come in.
Yeah.
Would you like to share a piece, another one of your pieces?
Well, I just got through talking about playing the pauses. Like I said, it's a jazz term. And in the poem, I try to use it the same kind of phraseology that might be in jazz, and it uses the jazz terminology in it. So it's called playing the pauses. Playing the pauses, the flexible give and take, a minuscule fluctuations in rhythm that makes music breathe life is the same cadence my heart feels when you call my name and I cannot respond because I'm in between a heart attack. There is that moment, within moments, the same temple of uncertainty, knowing you will miss me if I respond to that other distant calling. So I do not reply to either. Your call holds me in place in the music, jazz riffs of notes, fluttering morning doves in the breath within breath. The air is so heavy with responsibility.
Wow. That was a fantastic piece of poetry. Gary Wingdog Malone, you're on the line. Gary's one of our favorite callers. Marianne, you're on the line. Any response, any thoughts about that particular piece that you heard?
God. I wish that my students in EN190 were here because I remember how much they loved the elephant on the keyboards, but I think they would love the poem even more hearing Martin read it because, you know, hearing him read it gave, you know, a whole new dimension.
Gary, anything from you? Any thoughts?
I'm just sitting here just absorbing the poetry and just listening.
Oh, that's fantastic. Martin, talk some more about that particular piece. I mean, as you talked about the rhythm and the phrasing, what stands out to you in that piece that makes that to you jazz poetry?
Well, I'm using the term in more than one way. I'm also talking about what it's like to have a heart attack or a near heart attack.
Okay.
Where you're having trouble breathing. And in music, they use the word breath a lot. Because when you talk, you have a certain rhythm to your voice. But it's also how you breathe at the same time. Poets do the same thing. They talk about poetry as breath. They talk about line breaks as breath. So I'm combining all that together. At the same time, I'm thinking of the music notes. And music notes can look dark because of the half keys and the quarter keys and every other key are filled in with black space. But the whole notes are open like a mouth open. If there's a whiteness inside that space. So the mourning doves are a different kind of a note in that poem because mourning doves are basically almost a white bird with gray shading to it, but they also have a strange note to them when they make their sound, that cooing sound. And when I was writing, it's just an image that came to my head while I was writing.
Now, how long does it take you to write a poem?
It depends. People get upset when I say 99% of my poems are all one take. I very rarely go back and revise. And that's from playing live music. I used to play jazz music. I used to play it live. And if you're playing, you have that one moment and you play, and if you make a mistake, you just keep right on going because you can't bring it back. You can't redo it. You can't, it's not like a recording where you can do multiple takes. So when I used to play, I would go into sometimes like a session musician position where I would play like a song or two on some album. I wouldn't get any credit for it. But I would have these crazy contracts that I would sign saying, I only do one take. And I made a lot of musicians mad because if they went on to try to correct the album or try to do a second tape, I wasn't there.
I guess like life, you only, as far as we know, is one take and you can't go back and redo it even if you want to.
That's right.
Like a poem in itself. All right. Martin, continue sharing your work. Any pieces that you'd like to share? This is your time tonight. I'm glad to have you with me.
I thought that I would be able to do a couple poems, so I didn't get that prepared. But
okay,
I have a friend that is leaving our area pretty soon. And I shared this poem with him a long time ago. And he asked me every once in a while to do it again. And it's about Charlie Parker playing saxophone. And all of a sudden, the poem changes completely. And I have all these other musicians that are different time periods. They were not necessarily all the same place at the same time, not even on the same bandstand. And I put Billie Holiday in there and Jelly Roll Morton and Louis Armstrong. So I've got all these different people in there. And when I was writing it, I was looking at a painting by William H. Johnson, who is a Harlem Renaissance painter. Mm-hmm. And he has this painting called Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, which shows all these people dancing. And they're jitterbugging, and they're having a great time. And there's an all-black orchestra on the bandstand, and they're all just jitterbugging like crazy. So I was thinking of Sweet Low, Sweet Chariot. Then it reminded me of the classical gospel song, Sweet Low, Sweet Chariot, which was written by Wallace Willis, who was an African-American slave that was also a Choctaw Indian. So the poem is called Salvation, and it's imagining these people in a bandstand. I leap from Charlie Parker's saxophone, glide across the ballroom floor, through the spotlight, into the vibrating crowd. Billie Holiday is moaning into a microphone like it was a red magnolia. She whispers about heartaches until she sees me dancing. She knows the exhilaration of freedom when she sees it. I'm a black note that's not held back. She changes the mood like an orange moon forecasting heat. Jazz heat. The kind of sweat found in bordellos when Jolly Roe Morton pounded his keys like a headboard, where Louis Armstrong learned how a trumpet should wail like a satisfied black woman. Yeah, Billy knows this. She knows the sound of quarters in the train, the shine from women too tired to do chores for white folks, the rise of mourning like a man in a cotton field. But this crazy dancing I'm doing, it just pleases the heart like fresh cornbread. So she belts out a song, so undomesticated, so full of steel workers rising buildings like making love, so jumped up that a fellow just can't sit still in his chair. It is like she's unbuttoning my shirt. It is like we have the rest of the night, and it is just us.
Would you do me a favor, sir, and share that one again?
Read it again?
Yes,
sure.
Please.
I might not even read it with the same inflection.
All right.
It's called Salvation. I leap from Charlie Parker's saxophone, glide across the ballroom floor, through the spotlight, into the vibrating crowd. Billie Holiday is moaning into the microphone like it was a red magnolia. She whispers about heartaches until she sees me dancing. She knows the exhilaration of freedom when she sees it. I'm a black note that's not held back. She changes the mood like an orange moon forecasting heat. Jazz heat. The kind of sweat found in bordellos when Jelly Roll Morton pounded keys like a headboard. Where Louis Armstrong learned how a trumpet should wail like a satisfied black woman. Yeah, Billy knows this. She knows the sound of porters in the train, the shine for women too tired to do chores for white folks, the rise of morning like a man from cotton fields. But this crazy dancing I'm doing, it just pleases the heart like hot, fresh cornbread. She knows this too. So she belts out a song so undomesticated, so full of steel workers rising buildings like making love, so jumped up that a fellow just can't sit still in his chair. It is like she's unbuttoning my shirt. It is like we have the rest of the night and it's just us.
Great. Do you feel that a reader should feel a poem like the sway of a jazz tune?
I hope I caught that feeling. And I'm trying to catch the sway of the music when I'm doing it. But that's a fun poem to read.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece. It's a beautiful piece. I like that line or that statement about being the black note. I can interpret that in so many different ways, being African-American myself. But that I really like that. I really like that. So when
you
think about writing poetry, where do you write? Where do you go? Where do you sit? Where do you stand? Where do you where do you write?
Well, I have a regular laptop, and I sit in a room and typing on my computer. But my wife watches me type. She says it looks like playing on a piano. And it's probably true because I started off on piano. I started playing classical music. And then one day I heard Jerry Lee Lewis, and it was all over for me. I wanted to play nothing but rock and roll. But then I found jazz. And then I switched instruments, and I started playing mandolin. I'm probably the only jazz mandolin player ever. I've never met anybody else even think about playing that instrument.
Mm.
But I'm not sure. I don't know enough to say that for certain. But I was playing, I have what's called a resonated mandolin. And some people call it a dobro mandolin. It has a metal plate on it. And it was made in the 1930s as out of the labor union strikes, so it could be heard in a large crowd when they were doing labor unions. So it has this high pinging sound to it when I play. I also used to play it like a slide guitar player, like the blues do. And I would take a metal a bottleneck, and I would bottleneck the mandolin. Sometimes I would play it like a banjo player, but tuning as I would play. So I would do all these really strange things with the mandolin, but the strangest I ever did was one time I tried to bow it like a violin. So I had all these different things I would do with the mandolin. But then I lost part of my hearing, which is necessary for being able to tune. And then I was finding myself asking people to tune my instrument. I realized it was time to quit.
I understand. Well, you know, today, well, over the course of the time since we first had our very first conversation, I attempted to do some research around the jazz mandolin, and I did find some artists who also play. There's the Jazz Mandolin Project, and they have an album. They have a number of tunes on YouTube. And I found a couple of pieces that I wanted to dedicate to you tonight.
Oh, thank you. Like I said, I did know this.
Yes. This is a guy. His name is Mando Pelli, and this is Gypsy Jazz Mandolin, and the song is All of Me. Thank you. staff here at Straight No Chaser, the Jazzier Side of Poetry, wanted to dedicate that particular piece of music to you as a jazz mandolinist.
That was funny. I used to play that song.
Oh, did you? Did you? Well, fantastic, fantastic. What we'd like to do at this point to give you a little break in terms of sharing your own work. If there's anyone else out there, Marianne or Gary or any other person who'd like to share a piece of poetry tonight, please do so. For our special guest here, Mr. Martin Willis Jr., this is our very first episode, and if there's anyone out there in radio land, broadcast land, the number is 646-716-8754. This is Straight No Chaser. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and I'd like to welcome you. So again, Marianne, do you have a piece you'd like to share?
Oh, gosh. I think I'm gonna do a shorter one. I was thinking of doing Crepuscle with Callie. Maybe I will do that Crepuscle with Callie, because I think that's one of my performance pieces. And this, too, is inspired by Monk. However, it's also inspired by Monk's patron and great and good friend, the Jazz Baroness, because she lived in a house with a lot of cats. I think maybe 200, 300 cats.
That's a lot of cats.
And, yeah. It's also one of my cat's worst nightmare to be living with that many cats. And that's, you know, instead of Crepuscle with Nellie, it's Crepuscle with Callie.
All right.
Crepuscle with Callie. Waves of scent wash over her. Urine, human and animal, sweat, damp wool, bad coffee, no cream, worse cigarettes. Flame, a perfume called joy. A landscape quakes, calico, tuxedo, gray, orange, white, black, tabby, manx. The notes on the record skip as the landscape, seen through cigarette smoke, shimmers and shifts. Chase or be chased, nip or be nipped, lick or be licked. The other cats multiply. They leap onto counters and crowd around windows. Lights twinkle with kindness out there. Raindrops sizzle. Inside, the cats multiply, sniffing at cold coffee cups and ashtrays, chasing, nipping, licking. Behind the last door, where the air is clear, the man in the suit and hat will not stir. He barely breathes. They say that one night he played the piano with his elbows while the sax wailed like a car alarm from the future, while the audience held up lit cigarettes. Another night he did not play at all. If she were herself, she'd rattle the blinds until he awoke and let her out of this nightmare. He doesn't have to play the piano for her, just get her out. Again, the landscape shifts. The record skips. Beyond the last door, Callie still seeks the threads of her waking life. No coffee, no cigarettes, no chasing, nipping, licking, the presence of real joy.
Talk about that piece, Marianne.
Well, as I said, it's a, you know, it's a blend of my own life and my research, reading about Monk, reading both Kelly's biography of him and a book by the Jazz Baroness's niece, which actually kind of explains why she had so many cats. It turns out her sister, the Jazz Baroness's older sister, was a naturalist, and she literally turned the family mansion into a bug house. So, you know, if you wanted a nice, neat, and clean house, you know, you should go to neither, you know, neither woman's house. And, you know, I was inspired by what I read. I was inspired by my husband saying, you know, hey, why don't you write a poem about our cat's worst nightmare?
All right.
And this is what, you know, this is what I came up with.
All right. Martins, any comment from you?
not that I can think of right now. It was just interesting because I've read her poems before, and just like she said, I've never heard her read.
Marianne is one of our top-notch members in the DC Poetry Project, and having her with us is always a special treat. What I'd like to do
Thanks.
Is to share one really quickly before we continue, move back to Martin. It's called A Little Billy in the Morning. So this is pretty much a rough draft. Well, it's been published in the song is Blogspot, but I still view it as being a rough draft. It's Billy in the Morning, and again, of course, it's based on the life of Billie Holiday. Billy in the Morning. Natural, low in calories, and containing no trans fat. A little Billy in the morning goes better with my coffee than either sugar or cream. She has a jazzy, melodic aroma and a fine and mellow taste, still bittersweet to the tongue like the strange fruit which grows sadly on the blood-colored leaves, dark green leaves, of the morning and melancholia tree. Yes, a little Billy in the morning goes better with my coffee than either sugar or cream. I savor every taste because I can already tell it's going to be a bad day. That's a little Billy in the morning.
I got it.
Yeah.
I got a piece
That's
I want to
fine.
Show.
You got one, Gary?
Yeah, I just wrote it.
You just wrote a piece of poetry?
Oh, wow.
Just wrote this sitting here listening to you all.
Yeah.
All right, fantastic.
And I don't even have a title for it. Okay, I just finished the last line. Okay, here I go. Can you feel my vibe as my pen tickle these ivory, black and white keys on my paper piano? The melody of the horn section. The cool, mellow sounds of the saxophone. I feel Charlie's bird. The smooth liquid flow from Miles' trumpet. A dark witch's brew mixed in with Winston Marsalis' New Orleans voodoo. Basmo, I hear you. Billy wailing about strange fruit. My pen began to tenderly weep for a Lady Holiday. And Sassy Sarah bebop me as I make love to my notebook. Can you feel my vibe? The string section killing me softly. Sweet violins in sync with big brass. The clarity of the flutes and clarinets. The snare drum beats and tickled my cymbals. I bob my head and tap dance my feet as I enjoy this jazzercise of poetry. Can you feel my vibe? As my pen release. That's it.
Wow.
Wow.
That was incredible. And you wrote that on the spur of the moment.
I was writing this as y'all was talking.
Talk about improvising.
That is.
I wanted to share a piece, and I looked through, and I didn't have anything I felt relevant to the jazzier side of poetry. So I just said, I write something.
There you go.
That's right. You know,
and I don't even know a whole lot about jazz.
But you do know the sway of music. You know the sway of a melodic tune, the sway of a sound. I mean, that rhythmic sway.
And to me, poetry is all kind of genres of music. Jazz, or poetry is music to me. So just, you know, I know a little about jazz, a little about music, but I know a little about poetry, and just infuse those three. So, and that's what I come up with.
You know, there's a statement here that words are a poet's instrument. What would make a poet a good jazz musician using his or her poetic instrument? That's a question for all of you. What would make a poet a good jazz musician using their instruments?
The ability to create and be. I think a lot of jazz improvise, and as using our pen and our poetry, we have the ability to improvise and to create. So I mean that would be in itself. That's my answer.
All right, Marianne Martin.
I think the willingness to perform and to learn. You know, I felt that when. You know, Martin, when you were talking about, you know, the music behind your poetry and, you know, all that you know in that field, you know, I felt like I was learning there, you know, especially, you know, what you were saying about, you know, the notes, the open notes, and then the, you know, the notes that are filled in.
I agree with that, too, also.
Martin, your thoughts being the man of the hour? Martin?
What?
Martin, your thoughts?
I said I just want to scat. You know, please, but I pop, pop, zero, pop, pop, zero, pop, pop, zero, pop, pop, like that. Because what I was doing there was I was catching sounds, and I've been listening to people's voices with their sounds. So the instrument is the voice.
The instrument is the voice. The nuances of the voice. And what you said earlier, Martin, I really agree with. When you recited the piece twice, you said the inflection would potentially be different, and it was different. I remember Billie Holiday made the statement that she never sang the same song twice. The same song the same way twice. It depended on her mood. It depended on her way of being that particular day. So that was a very powerful statement that you made.
Also, it depends on if you have a live audience. I'm sitting in a house, and I don't have an audience. So you can feed off the audience, which a lot of musicians do. And if you see the audience is really with you, then you get more expressive. You try more things. You try to see, okay, they like this. Will they like this? And I'm going to try this idea, and I'm going to try that idea. And the more the audience responds, the braver you tend to get.
The braver you can be.
Yeah, I agree with that, too, because even when you're doing performance, spoken words live, when you get to that point when you know you got the audience in your hand or you got their attention, or, you know, it do makes a difference, and you can, you know, you can get more into the piece, you know, according to how they feel, how the audience is vibing off of you, or you vibing off of them. So I agree with all of that. Yeah, that's so true.
Well, you're just echoes off of people.
All right. Well, we'll be right back. This is Ben Sound. That's
back. My name is Michael Ingram, and welcome to Straight No Chaser, the jazzier side of poetry. We are here with our very special guest, Mr. Martin Willits Jr. It's been great having you here, Martin. I mean, I'm just reveling in Mary Ann's poetry, your poetry, Gary, your poetry, just thinking about, wow, it's just I'm just overwhelmed.
Thank you.
Are you? All right.
Yeah, so it's a good beginning, I hope, to the show.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's a different kind of show. It's a different kind of energy, and when we have great guests like Martin, it always makes it a great place for us to start. You know,
yeah.
Louis Armstrong once made the statement about jazz. He stated, "If you have to ask, you'll never know. If you have to ask, you'll never know." So how do you think that fits into poetry, that if you have to ask about it, then you'll never know it?
I hate to explain poems. I feel that if you have to explain a poem, then it's not a very good poem.
All right.
It should stand by itself, or people should be able to understand it. But if they don't, then they're just not going to like it.
I guess I could ask a question, or should people always like your poetry? Who's the poetry for? Is it for the people, or is it for you in terms of your own self-expression? Anyone can answer.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit of both. Because, mm-hmm. you know, of course I'm going to write about what I'm interested in. I'm not going to write about something, you know, just because I feel that I should, because, you know, other people are interested. But at the same time, you know, I do want to be attentive to my audience. You know, I want, you know, for example, you know, I did the half and half. You know, one of the poems I read was the one about, you know, the girls in Ashley Stewart. And I thought that, you know, people would like that, whereas maybe, you know, at a place where people don't know, you know, who Ashley, you know, what an Ashley Stewart store is, I wouldn't read that poem. And probably right now you're asking, oh, my God, what's Ashley Stewart?
Yes. What is Ashley Stewart?
Well,
it's a really nice clothing store for larger size women.
Okay. All right. My mom is a larger size woman, and she shopped at Lane Bryant. I'm not sure whether anyone's ever heard of Lane Bryant.
Oh, Lane Bryant. I know Lane Bryant very
I know
well.
Lane Bryant. And Added Dimensions. Martin.
I don't think everybody has to necessarily like your stuff, your poetry. I'm going to speak for me, just for me. I don't think everybody necessarily has to like my poetry as much as I would like for most people to be able to relate to it. Because, you know, you can not like something, but you can still relate to it. Because, you know, and the reason I say that is, given the message that it's presenting, that I may be trying to rent, you may not like that message, or you may not like, you know, like you said, the topic even. But I would like for what I do write for some people, for people to relate to it, be able to relate to it, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. It does make sense.
Yeah, that's reminding me of your poem that you contributed to The Song Is Gary, because, you know, that was a very provocative poem.
Right,
exactly.
But everybody may not like it, but I feel like if they give it an honest evaluation, an honest read, they can relate to it in some kind of way, even mm-hmm. from the perspective of somebody else that's been through it or going through it or whatever, you know. So that's what I mean. Yeah, I agree with you.
Mm.
Martin, what I'd like you to do is to talk to us a little bit about your jazz poetry chapbook, Late All Night Sessions with Charlie the Bird Parker and Members of the Birdland, in take three.
It's a very long poem in Charlie Parker's book. I mean, there's like 5-10 page poems in this book. There's, in a program like this, I see I've got 7 minutes. I can't possibly read them all or even one of them. But I can read at least one part of one from the first poem called Birdland, which is the place named after Charlie Parker and where he played a lot. In this section here, Judy Garland makes a guest appearance. I was there the night it closed. I will never forget. It was 1956, and Judy Garland stood outside, or someone that looked like her, kicking at the padded locked door, soused to the gills, testifying, "I've been kicked out of better joints than this." The door did not respond. Her eyes were dull diamonds. Her mascara was rivers of rheum. She lost one high heel shoe. She whirled around and drop kicked the store. The door did not say a word. Somewhere in the alley was a man with a sax. On the ground, his hat and loose chains. He spoke like Swamp Bottom. "Lady, the bird done flew the coop." He played one note and it became a sewer cover. The door remembered notes like that and smirked cockeyed like a bet gone bad. "It ain't fair," she snapped, her fist closed, clenched full of leftover days. "It just ain't fair. The party's over." "Lady, it just begun." He played one note, big as a skyscraper, the kind you write home about, the kind of letter you never send because you don't want to admit how everything turned out. The door had gotten eviction notices like this. And suddenly, she wasn't washed up. She wasn't on the way out. She was on the way back to center stage. A white gardenia in her hair. She is Billie Holiday singing, "Loving Man, Where Did He Go Away?" The stage light focused on that last note that was the size of a dime, but big enough to swallow the universe, because pain always does. And the audience sits in her palm on every word, hoping the music does not go away. Then that door opens. She walks in. Everything lights up. Applause is a rumble of wings. There's a difference of carrying a torch and being a torch singer. What sets the audience in crystal clear blue flame? The other waits for things that ain't about to happen.
I mean, I could really feel that. I felt like the room was swaying. I'm not sure whether that was because I'm lightheaded or not. I don't know. But I could really, really feel that. It is hot here in Washington, D.C. I mean, so do you believe that you can riff in your poetry? Maybe I'm being redundant. Can you riff? Can you just trip the light fantastic in your work and people can hear it? And or read it. Read that riff. Martin, you're the jazz musician.
I wasn't sure if you were talking to me or one of the other people on the phone. But in that particular poem, it's a really long poem. I was riffing that entire poem when I was writing it. And,
oh, wow.
The only way I was able to catch that whole poem was just to write it. And it's a very long piece. It's like 10 pages. And it's just a part.
Now, where can a person purchase your Charlie Parker piece, your chapbook?
Some of my books are on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So if they spell my name correctly, and a lot of people spell it wrong, including people that publish me, it's got the W-I, two L's, I, two T's, S. And if they type in my name, in the Amazon, and they will see I have not only that book, but I was reading from another book that is also on there called Playing the Pauses in the Absence of Stars. So I write all over the place, not just the music, as other types of poems. And I'm glad you asked me that question because it gives me a chance to say something nice.
All right, please.
Thank you.
One of the things that Martin and I talked about prior to the show beginning or starting was the fact that he's an origamist.
Wow.
He does fantastic. Yes, he's an origamist. Martin, talk to us about origami and origami poetry.
I do a program that I call Origami Haiku Jumping Frogs, which combines poetry with origami. And it has 10 folds. I find if I try to teach people how to do origami, the most they can handle is 10, and even sometimes I have to show them how to do the 10 folds. And when you finish making the origami haiku jumping frog, it'll actually bounce when you touch it. So a lot of people are not used to what I do because I do a lot of really strange things with performance.
Again, I was thunderstruck when you shared it as well. I'm sure there's others are thunderstruck too about how it bounces. So you travel around the country. You travel around the country sharing your work.
I've done this a number of different places, and when I first did this program was at the Massachusetts Poetry Festival, and it was intended as a children's program. It's so hard to find poetry programs that have something to do with children. And I was supposed to do it one time. I had 40 people show up the first program, all trying to fold paper. And then another group of people came in, and this time I did 50. And then I thought I was done, and another group of people show up. And I don't know, I lost count after a couple hundred people that were folding origami. And then when I finally ran out of people that wanted to learn how to do this program, I went outside and I saw one of the children bouncing their little origami frog down the sidewalk. I thought, that's great advertising.
Oh, that's beautiful advertisement. Well, everyone, we've reached that time in the program when it's almost time to say goodbye. But I'd like to thank our very special guest, Mr. Martin Willits Jr., for sharing his work. I'd also like to thank Marianne and Gary for being here with us on our debut episode of Straight No Chaser, The Jazzy Side of Poetry. Join us again next month as we continue this journey, understanding the correlation, the connection between jazz and poetry. I'd like to tell everyone good night. Thanks again, and let poetry ring. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you.